So today I would like to speak briefly on two topics. One is on mantras, because I have received about 3 or 4 emails asking questions on mantras and their role and which form of mantra is the best. So I would like to speak a bit about that. And the second topic is this confusion that arises sometimes, that is a particular teacher one's guru or not? And what if you are drawn to many teachers? These are both actually subjects for independent talks. We can delve into them later, but for this live stream, for the first 20-25 minutes, I would like to dedicate to these subjects, after which we can take questions on any matter not related to these two specifically. So, the first question is, are mantras for everyone? Now, in the Indian tradition, our conditioning has generally been that there's a mantra in the family, which is either passed down from the parent or the family guru or the religion. Now, as Nisargadatta Maharaj would say to people who would come to him, they were coming to him for self-knowledge, jnana yoga. But to certain kinds of people, he would suggest a mantra, and he would even in his early days initiate them into a mantra, and later on, you know, he would give the mantra if anyone asked for it. But he was very clear that if one's mindset and one's attitude is to chant a mantra, then that is the path. Because some people who came to him said, we find what you are saying too difficult to understand, and our nature is not driven to, you know, self-inquiry. We are not the intellectual type. Therefore, please suggest something simple. So a mantra was suggested. Now, the word mantra itself means to free the mind. Mantra, man is mind. So when one's focus is on reciting or chanting a mantra, that mantra has become the focal point of the mind's attention, to the exclusion of other thoughts. Therefore, freeing the mind. Freeing the mind means freeing the thinking mind, which is always running all over the place. So someone asked me, what is the best form to receive a mantra? Should one receive it from a guru who initiates one into the mantra? And based on what I have read and spoken with masters and my own experience, the conclusion which I came to, which other people might differ with, is the best form is if a mantra spontaneously arises within yourself, or you receive it in a vision or a dream. Now, in my own case, a few years ago, it was in a dream that a mantra came to me. Out of the blue. And then when I read Sri Aurobindo, this confirmed my intuition that that which arises spontaneously from within is the best. It could even be in a moment of fear, let's say. If you see which mantra arises the fastest, that is an indication of the mantra which is for you. The second best, so to speak, we are not actually grading them, but just for understanding the different types of mantra initiation, we are going to call it that way, is receiving it from a guru. Now, guru means enlightened master. Now, why is this important? You see, because when a guru gives the mantra, one must understand that it is coming from the source. The guru represents consciousness. There are four types of speech: para, pashyanti, madhyama, vaikari. So before a word is spoken, it emerges first from the source, translates into a thought, and then emerges from the mouth through the tongue. That is the process of delivery. So the enlightened master represents the origin of the mantra. Therefore, the importance is on being initiated by the guru with the mantra. So suppose one was wanting to recite a mantra and one did not have a vision or an intuition, etc. This is the second best option. These are far more beneficial, so to speak, than just choosing one mantra by yourself and then deciding to recite it. Because then the individual does not know whether his thinking mind has been a part of the process of choosing that mantra, or it is an intuition which has made him choose that mantra. Then I was asked, is chanting or reciting a mantra the same as playing your music and listening to mantras chants? Now, it is not the same in that sense, because in the first two instances, the mantra has come from within. There's a more direct connection with the source from where it has arisen. But this does not mean that listening to mantras playing in the background, or chanting, let's say if you are chanting in a group, it does not mean that is ineffective, because mantras are, after all, vibrations. They are bound to impact the body, which is a vibration itself, and the atmosphere, which is a vibration too. Bound to. Now, if we take the example of the Golden Temple in Amritsar, which has a water body around it, or tank or pond, if you may, where it is considered holy to take a dip in that. It is because that water body has absorbed the vibrations of the chanting, which has gone on for decades and decades and decades and decades. And all these mantras have been handed down through generations. They are extremely ancient. Now, if mantras represent the content of your consciousness, and let's say you are not inclined to chanting mantras, and you are following the process of Jnana Yoga. Let's take the case of Ramana Maharshi's teaching where he says, ask yourself, who am I? That becomes the mantra. The inquiry becomes the mantra. Because that is now what is in your mind all the time. The first focal point of attention. If Nisargadatta Maharaj says, abide in your beingness, you are not the body. That becomes the mantra. If one is thinking of that throughout the day, reflecting on the teaching, seeing its impact on one's life, that is the mantra. Mantra, freeing the mind. My guru Rameshji's mantra was, nobody is the doer of their actions. Just as it is mentioned in the Bible, in the Gita, in the Quran, and so forth. So if one was living that awareness, that in daily life, whoever I come across, my family, friends, strangers, colleagues, whoever it be, the understanding is now deep within that they are all instruments through whom the same source functions. That is the mantra. So if he says, accept everything as God's will, that is the mantra. Now the second part, as I said, is about having a spiritual teacher or comparing spiritual teachers or following different spiritual teachers. Especially today when there are so many options available to us on the internet. And there are many aspects to this subject. Many ways to look at it. The most common question is it possible to have more than one guru? Now the answer to that is a yes and a no. Yes, it is possible to have more than one guru, but at any given point in time, you will have only one guru. At any given point of time, you can have only one guru. If you have two gurus at that point of time, it means the mind is still not settled and clear. Now, Rameshji, in his own case, had a family guru for 30 years, more maybe. And it is only when he met Maharaj, he felt this dramatic shift and realized that Maharaj is his guru. So did Rameshji have two gurus? The answer is yes. But who was his final guru? Maharaj, that is a very clear answer. Now, you may have a guru, and yet what other masters say resonates with you so much that you like listening to their talks. There is certainly no harm in that. Everyone is expressing an aspect of the divine itself. All roads lead to the source. But we must ask ourselves that are we first clear or are we still undecided? If we are undecided, so to speak, then by all means, it's only through exploration, understanding the different teachings which are presented, and then seeing which one is drawn to the most. And that is measured by the direct impact in your daily living of the peace, equanimity, and tranquility you feel. If one finds that one teaching or that one teacher where you feel, now I'm at rest, I have found a depth of peace which I did not find before, then that is your teacher. After that, by all means, like I said, you will find other expressions all over the world which may be echoing it in different words, and you of course resonate with that, but you know where you are now established. This is very crucial. And if you still don't feel that, like, yes, I'm anchored in this one place, then the seeking continues, but now you have a measure. Now I know what I am looking for is peace. Then you start exploring with this awareness in the background that I'm not just undertaking this exercise to accumulate intellectual knowledge. I'm not just doing this to enthrall the mind with concepts, but now I know what I am looking for. And with that awareness, perhaps if it is one's destiny, one will come across that one teaching which has delivered that. That is why Maharaj has said, when he was asked this question about having many gurus or one guru, he said, you find water not by digging many shallow wells all over the land, but one deep well. Now, in my own case, it took me time to realize who was my guru, because this word guru was loaded with so many concepts. People look down also upon this word guru. They do not understand what it truly means. And so I reached the conclusion over time that the teacher I was visiting not only echoed my own sentiments about life, but it was his teaching was a validation of my life's experience. And that is where I found my peace. But I met many masters along the way. Each has helped me in their own way. Some have impacted me deeply. But I found myself going back over 10 years to this one place. Because a lot of this comes from sanskaras, or as prarabdha, as Ramana Maharshi would say. Now, I would like to show you certain drawings. You may find them a bit abstract, about how the guru is chosen. This is a vision which my mother had over days. She had the ability to see visions in her meditation, and that was her journey of spiritual awakening. And you will understand through this brief explanation how, after all, you have only one inner guru or one higher self, or use whatever word you like, and how this will prove that ultimately the guru is one. So this is from her diary of drawings which were published as books. I will quickly take you through a few of them. This one here, is actually the self manifesting out of the individual. This is not another individual. The self in the subtle form, it has manifested out of the individual. This can happen at any age, whenever the seeking is supposed to start. This is the second step. The self now shines a light on the individual, and it is from the third eye, the eye of knowledge, intuition. So it is still the individual and the self. Now it starts expanding. This is the form of consciousness. This is the individual. It starts expanding. This is all in the subtle form, which is happening before you think you even know you're on the path, as ordained by the source. And it is after this that this one, the subtle body, which is the body of light, expands into consciousness, expands as light, and then that light identifies one form which the individual takes as the guru. So even before you think you have met your guru, this process has already been set in motion, because the guru is nothing but your inner self. That is the grace. Now, this is not possible if one has two gurus, because that is where the confusion is. So this process has to be trusted. And of course, the outer guru represents the inner guru, the Satguru. Because that is how it began. It appears to us as different bodies. I am separate from the guru. This body is separate from the body of the guru. It appears to the disciple, not to the guru. So in that sense, this is how it is ordained. And of course, the guru leads you to the inner guru, the Satguru. But it is a step on the journey. Ramana Maharshi has spoken about it. Shirdi Sai Baba has spoken about it. Nisargadatta Maharaj has spoken about it. Because you see, sometimes there is this approach that, oh, we don't need a guru, it's our inner guru. Now, one has to see whether that statement is coming through the thinking mind of the ego, or that is one's true knowledge, true intellect, and true understanding. So, there are so many things, you know, which we take for granted. Like, for example, for me, it was a tremendous blessing that I had a mother who went through this process of Kundalini awakening, and it was our conditioning as children to absorb whatever she was saying. Like, she would say in casual conversation that, do you know the Trishul of Shiva is actually the two main nadis of the body, the sun and the moon, and the middle part of the trident is the Sushumna Nadi, the channel. These are all symbolic. To us, it looks just like a Trishul, you see. Or the bells in the temple which we ring, which represent the Sahasrar Chakra, that is where they are up, or the church bells which are right on top. So all these revelations were given to her, which were extremely beautiful. If anyone is interested in symbolism in Indian culture, then they would find her books quite appealing because it's mainly drawings and diary entries. So coming back to this, because I've had a situation before where someone has been running past another teacher's concepts with me, which is okay by me because I am speaking from what my understanding is. But it can lead to confusion on part of the seeker. Because just as in school, now you have different subjects, math, biology, chemistry, English, but for each subject you have one master. Another teacher of the same subject will explain it in a different way. So there's no end to the number of opinions you can get from different teachers on the same subject. Therefore, one has to be careful because then the mind can seek endless answers to the same questions. So while it is okay for me to answer it, in that sense, a disservice is being done if this is being repeated, not only to the two teachings, but mainly to the individual seeker who can get confused in this process of thinking that he or she is clarifying things. And therefore, that is the limit of the mind. And so in your heart, which teaching or teacher resonates with you is a fabulous pointer. In your heart, which teaching has hit home?